Now I have with me this time Chris from, and Chris is involved with Ham Radio, and we want to find out. I know we've spoken to Chris about a year ago. We want to find out a bit about what's happened in that year and just find out a bit about it. So, first of all, welcome, Chris.
Thank you, Alan.
Chris, I noticed you were hoping to have a visitor with you, and unfortunately you had to pull out. But and you said he was involved with Civil Defence Radio. Now, in what way do civilians get involved with Defence Radio?
Well, Civil Defence is virtually civilians doing things that would help people survive a disaster or recover from a disaster. So, technically speaking, a lot of what the SES does is civil defence sort of activities. But there are other things to do, like food caching and things like that, but not stupid like the preppers do, where they go out in the bush and build their own places and fill it up with 14 years worth of stuff, but enough to survive for a short period of time, making sure that you've got the provisions and whatnot that you need. John is the secretary of the Australian, what's it called, Australian People Survival League,
right.
And he is much more better equipped to talk about it than I am.
Yep.
But because we're both involved with amateur radio, and there are a couple of others who are involved in amateur radio, one in Adelaide, and I think there's one guy in Perth that may be coming up shortly.
Right.
And we do use a lot of communications. A lot of it's done on handheld CB radios.
Yep.
But with the amateur radio license, because you can have better radios and more power and better antennas and things like that, we're trying to encourage people to get their licences and to buy, and you can buy a decent radio that'll do the comms you want in that sort of situation for $130, $140 or something like that. So
it's not a deal. It's
certainly cheaper in a lot of respects than a CB for a four-wheel drive.
It probably is. Chris, just going back a while, I think we've, and I don't want to trivialise it at all, but I think we've all heard that Tony Hancock, where he's a ham radio operator and he talks to all his mates around the world and all this sort of stuff. And I know it's a comedy show, so I don't put a lot of stock into it. But one of the things that he was tried to get involved in and went rather badly, because that's the sort of show he ran, was in somebody was calling Mayday because something had happened with a boat. And we won't go into it because it was just a load of rubbish. But does that ever happen in real life?
Look, it does. In fact, recently in the US with the hurricanes, there have been a lot of amateur radio operators working over there, taking calls from fellow hams, listening on other designated frequencies that are used for emergency calls, and passing information on. So, yeah, it does happen. It doesn't happen very often. But it does happen. And we need to be prepared. We all the amateurs need to be prepared for it. There are provisions in the Radio Act that allow for us to take those calls and to make them a priority and to tell everybody else to shut up.
So if any, like, I want to use this as a bit of an example. He heard a Mayday on this boat, and that's where the whole thing just went silly. But would that ever happen? And if so, if one of your people were on the air and they picked up a Mayday, we'll say from a boat, would they then try to work their way through it, or would they immediately then have to switch over, get hold of, say, Triple O or an emergency service and say, this is what's happening?
Well, yes, ring 000 or the maritime emergency number, which I don't have, but that would be the thing to do, and say, look, I'm getting a Mayday call on this radio frequency.
Yep.
Get the details, by all means, get the details and get them down on paper so that they're recorded, and then pass it on to the authorities, but at least give them a chance to have perhaps take over the call using their expertise, because they know what questions to ask.
Has that happened that you know of?
I don't know. I don't know of any. I know when I was involved in CB Radio and Crest, which is the emergency monitoring teams, we took some fairly serious calls and some pretty big car crashes and things like that, that we were the first people that were called. Of course, this was in the days before mobile telephones.
Yep, of course.
And you know, people had CBs in their cars and they'd just dial up either Channel 5 on UHF or Channel 9 on the 27 meg radio and call out for a monitor. And
were they emergency numbers? They're
the emergency channels, 5 and 35 on UHF
yep.
and Channel 9 on the 27 megs. And it's legislated that they are emergency channels, and there's a bloody huge fine for anybody who breaches it. It's 2,000 penalty units, up to 2,000 penalty units, and currently a penalty unit's $413.
Geez, you're talking big money.
Yeah, big money. And that's for even interfering with an emergency call on any of the other channels if one comes up.
Yep.
It's the same penalty.
Gee. Got to take a quick break. I've got some other questions I want to pose to you, please, Chris. To Chris from the Yarra Valley Amateur Radio Group. Chris, as I drive around, particularly once you get out of the city a bit, you often see vans have got channels such and such. So is that so they can talk to each other, or what's the whole yeah. And is that one particular channel or what?
That'll be a CB channel, so they'll have the Channel 40 or Channel 22 or Channel 18, depending on where they are. The Pacific Highway north of Sydney has a particular frequency that most people use. Yep. On the road, most people sit on Channel 40.
Right.
Which is unofficially designated as the highway channel. I can listen to those on my amateur radio in the car if I want to. Legally, I can't transmit on those channels with that radio because it's not type approved, so I don't.
Oh, so you've got to have a special radio.
So you've got to have a CB radio. CB radios have to be type approved by the ACMA. Yeah. Which is why you've only got certain brands, and you can't just import a cheap Chinese radio and program it, because they might be putting out all sorts of rubbish radiation and whatnot, so interfering with stuff which we don't want.
Yeah. So what's the idea of that Channel 40 then? Like, can anybody use it?
Anybody can use it. There's no the only restrictions on CB are 5 and 35 is the emergency channel, 22 and 23. Are for some sort of telemetry. I haven't got into that, and I think there's a couple that are reserved for expansion that at this stage aren't legal to use, but will be at some stage in the future.
Oh. So the caravans, I just want to get back to them for a minute, because I've seen it around quite a bit. Do they have to have a licence to broadcast on that channel?
No. CB radio is what they call a class licence. You don't need any qualifications. You just go and buy the radio, the antenna and the cables, and put it in your car, truck, van, four-wheel drive, whatever. Mount the antenna somewhere appropriately. Make sure that it's mounted properly and that it's actually not faulty, which is usually done with a standing wave ratio meter, which most amateurs would have, and most CB shops would probably have too. And then you're free to pick yourself a call sign and go out and do stuff.
Let's just talk about CB40 a minute. So if I had a caravan, which I don't want to buy one.
Neither do I.
But anyway, if I had one of those, and I'm down around, we'll say Sale. We're just on the highway down there. So am I going to have people babbling on that all the time? And how far from Sale, either way, am I likely to pick people up?
All right, there's several several conditions that affect you. If you're in the metro area, there are a lot of people who really shouldn't be on the radio on there, and they get abusive and annoying and whatnot. So I usually leave mine off until I get outside, if I'm heading that way past Berwick or something like that. Now, once you get past there, it's fairly quiet. You'll hear truckies talking to each other as they go past, getting road reports and things like that.
Yep.
You don't get a lot of traffic on the radio, and it depends to a certain extent where your antenna's mounted on the vehicle. If it's mounted on one of the front corners, your best signal's going to be behind you. If it's mounted at the back, your best signal's going to be in front. And if it's mounted in the middle of the roof, then you're going to have pretty well all-round coverage.
All right.
So, and of course, the higher it is, the better. So truckies seem to get better range. Well, they do get better range than people in a car because they're a metre and a half or so higher. So that makes a significant difference. So there's all sorts of technical things there. So range, look, UHF CB, anything from 5 to maybe 20 kilometres. But again, terrain.
Because
other interference, other noises happening, and whatnot, all affect it.
I was just thinking when you get say past Bensdale, because I used to go that way a lot for work. As you're coming down into Lakes Entrance, you go down that big hill.
Yep.
So that's not going to have as good a reception as what say Bensdale is.
Yeah. Well, if you're on the top of the hill, you're going to be mighty good.
But as you go into the hill, it's just going.
Yeah.
Well, you mentioned truckies. Now, are they limited just to that Channel 40?
No, not at all. Not at all. They can use any frequency they use, but because it's been common usage.
Yep.
In the old days of 27 megs, it was Channel 8.
Yep.
In CB, when that came out, and we had initially only had 40 channels, yep. They chose 40.
Yep.
And it's just a convention. There's nothing actually legislated about it.
But there's no other channels. Like, if they're on channel 40, like the truckies don't use 36 and 42 or anything. It's mainly
generally 40. Not, yep. Unless it's a company or something like that. Yep. I noticed as we went down the Eastern Freeway in towards the city the other day that the building sites where the trucks go in have got a sign up that says CB Channel 19 or something on them.
Yep.
There are a lot of them used. The railway crossing removal were using Channel 19 when they were doing Lilydale and Croydon.
Yeah.
So just to get the trucks into the places they want. I think the Coldstream Quarry were using one of the CB channels too. I could hear them from my place.
Just to get the trucks in where they want them.
Exactly.
All
exactly.
Right. Got to take a quick break. We'll be back with more. You're obviously on the CB quite a bit. We're talking about CB, first of all, and we're talking very much about the truckies again. Have you found that since mobile phones come in that the use of CBs has dropped?
The use of 27 meg CBs has dropped since the US have brought in.
Let's just stop you there, because the audience and I don't know what you mean.
Okay, well, that was the 27 megahertz was the original CB that developed out of amateur radio in the 1960s, I think, in the USA, with some low-powered radios, and they had originally 23 crystal-locked frequencies that they were using.
Right.
And that gave you, with a 27 megahertz set, or 11-metre set, you could cover just about the world on CB radio. When I was involved in it, back in the 70s and 80s, I was sitting up in the hills around Buxton talking to the US and France and Germany and Italy and all sorts of places, just with the 12-watt radio. And I was just happened to be in the right spot at the right time.
Yep.
And, it was good fun. And I'd been interested in amateur radio. My first experience with amateur radio was as a 6 or 7 year old in Cubs when they had the very first jamboree on the air, which was scouting getting involved in amateur radio.
Yep.
I was either the first one or the first jotter or the second one was my first exposure to amateur radio. And I've been interested in it ever since.
Yep.
Doing physics in secondary school, I sort of, electronics, okay. And then I went and joined the PMG's department as a technician in training. And, of course, there was lots of people there who were amateur radio operators, and they had a club at the training school, and that was 1970. And I sort of got a bit involved there. And I had a mate who was an amateur, and I used to go around to his place. And I always said that I was going to get my license. And life got in the way, family, wife, kids, sporting activities and whatnot. When the kids had grown up and left home, I decided, well, I'm getting close to retirement. I'm going to go and get my license. So,
all right, so now you were talking about the 27 as though that's old hat now.
There are still radios around. There are still a few companies making them. I don't think anybody's importing them into Australia for sale. It's still legal to do so. But I don't think there's any money in it, so, you know, I don't think anyone's doing it. So UHF is the thing that's happening now. There are a lot of four-wheel drive clubs and bushwalking clubs and things like that who use UHF CB, both handhelds and car/truck radios.
Now, hang on. Can I just ask you two things? Do you need a license for the UHF? And secondly, what's the advantage of the UHF rig as opposed to what the old CB was?
No, you don't need a license for any CB, provided it's an approved radio.
Yep.
Each has its advantages and disadvantages. 27 megs had the advantage of longer range, but it's significant higher noise levels. UHF has the advantage that you can have a repeater sitting up on a hill somewhere, which listens on, the emergency channels, 5 and 35. The repeater listens on channel 35 and it transmits on channel 5. And the monitors listen on 5 and transmit on 35, so you can use that extra height to give you the range.
Right.
Which means that, you know, if you're a monitor in, or say we were in Nunawading, in a fairly low place, somebody on the other side of the dandenongs calls in with an emergency, we could hear it because it was hitting the repeater up at Olinda.
So the UHF is mainly clearer, but it hasn't got the same range, is that
right? That's right. UHF CB's got a range of, well, it depends, as I was saying before. Yep. It depends. 5 to maybe 25, 30 kilometres. But again, the conditions. It's the peak of the, just about the peak of the sun cycle at the moment. We're getting all sorts of strange things happening in radio. We're getting guys in Tasmania. On amateur radio, which is just a little bit lower frequency than the UHF CB, We're able to talk to them direct from northern Tasmania into the eastern suburbs of Melbourne.
Unreal.
So, you know, that doesn't happen very often, and it doesn't happen for very great length of time.
All right, so you talk about 5 and 35 as the emergency channels.
Yep.
Are they the police channels, or do they have their own channels?
Police have their own frequency in the state government allocation of frequencies.
Yeah.
Police frequencies are all digitally encrypted, and they're all digital radios that they're using there.
So you shouldn't be able to hear them.
You'll hear them, but it'll just be digital. It'll sound like data.
Right.
So. And it's actually illegal to try and recover that data and convert it back into voice.
Oh, right.
And there's a significant fine for that too.
So what's on Channel 5 and 35? When you say they're emergency channels, what are they monitoring? What are you monitoring when you listen to them?
Most of the time, most of the monitors listen on Channel 5.
Yeah.
Because that's the emergency channel, and the output of the emergency repeaters.
But who's inputting into it? Whose information are you hearing?
Well, the radios automatically switch when you're in repeater mode. Right. If you hit the transmit button, it transmits on 35.
Right.
So the repeater picks that up and resends it out on Channel 5.
Yeah, but. Who's inputting the information? Emergency channel?
The emergency channel is not owned by anybody. The repeaters are owned by various organisations. The biggest one in Australia would be Crest,
right?
The Citizens Radio Emergency Service Teams. They would be the biggest, and they have several repeaters in Victoria and others around Australia.
But if I was if I was to tune on the Channel 35 on my way home now,
hear anything.
Right. So it's only if there's an emergency, is it?
Yeah.
And who would put on the Channel 35? Would it be a road accident? Would it be?
Yeah. Could be a road accident. Could be a lost kid. Could be
fire.
Fire. Could be someone breaking into a house or a shop or...
But Channel O and... Oh, not Channel O. The police and the emergency... the emergency services aren't going to be listed to Channel 35.
No.
Right,
no,
so it's... No. That's what I'm trying to get at.
It's civilians that do the monitoring and they have training on how to handle a call.
Yep.
What questions to ask and how to determine whether a call's genuine or not. And that's a significant thing too, because we have had people come up with some fairly sophisticated emergencies,
right,
that weren't genuine. And been a couple of times when I've myself rung the police and said, look, I've got this call from this person, and I can't tell you whether it's genuine or not. So can you send someone out to have a look at it, please?
So
and they'll generally call me back and say, oh, look, that was a good call, or we couldn't find anything.
So, pardon me, if you were listening to Channel 35 this afternoon on your way home and someone came up and said, oh, look, I've just seen this or that, the only use of that is for you to ring 000 and pass on to whether it be fire or ambulance.
Exactly,
is that right?
Exactly. We don't do anything else apart from gather information, pass it on to the authorities.
Yep. All right, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
Stupid Cupid, you're a real mean guy. I'd like to clip your wings so you can fly. I'm in love and it's a crying shame. I know that you're the one to blame. Hey, hey, set me free. Stupid Cupid, stop picking on me. I can't do my homework and I can't think straight. I meet him every morning about 8:30. I'm acting like a lovesick fool. You've even got me carrying his books to school. Hey, hey, set me free. Stupid Cupid, stop picking on me. You mixed me up for good. like a crazy clown, and I don't feature what you're putting down. Since I kissed his love and lips of wine, the thing that bothers me is that I like it fine. Hey, hey, set me free. Stupid Cupid, stop picking on me. Got me jumping like a crazy clown, and I don't feature what you're putting down. Since I kissed his loving lips of wine, the thing that bothers me is that I like it fine. Hey, hey, set me free. Stupid Cupid, stop picking on me. Hey, hey, set me free. Stupid Cupid, stop picking on me.
And that's a 2023 version of Stupid Cupid, which Connie Francis and a number of them did back in the 1960s. And that was Andre Cordova. And that's one of the Oz indie tracks that Greg has had in the last few months come in. And I thought we'd put that in this afternoon. But it was certainly a repeat of the old 1960 show song. Right.
And so, I remember that very well. It was a very good song in my day.
Yeah, Connie Francis.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did. And I'll be playing that sort of music on Sunday between 12 and 3. All right. So if somebody wants to start up today to get involved with UHF, because obviously CB is really only much good in the car, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it is. There are a few guys that have home bases, but... you know, it's usually to talk to the wife or something, or the husband, depending on... and that's what we did, but, you know, it was primarily, originally, it was just to chat with your friends and whatnot, yeah. Especially when mobile phones were not ubiquitous as they are now. It was a good way of communications. It was one of the very early forms of social media.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so if somebody said today, look, I think I'd like to start up on UHF.
On amateur radio?
Yeah, on amateur radio. What sort of costs are involved in setting up?
Right, well, your costs will be buying the equipment.
Which is how much, roughly?
Which is, well, the little radio I've got in the car, which... is about four times as powerful as a CB radio. No, it's about five times as powerful as a CB radio. Not that it makes much difference. Cost me $130. Gee. The antenna cost me about 45 or 50.
And you're talking the antenna on the roof of your car, aren't
you? The roof of the car that I've... that got destroyed 3 weeks ago. It was not on the roof of the new one yet.
What happened to the car?
I got involved in a car accident that wasn't my fault. I was stopped at a set of lights and somebody turned across traffic and clipped another car coming the other way and went into the back of me.
Oh, it's so good.
Made a mess of my car, but the insurance companies said, no, we're not going to fix that, so...
Fair enough.
I went out and picked up a new one yesterday, so I haven't done anything with it much. Apart
so
from,
we're talking around about $200.
We're talking about $200 and a bit of time to fit it all together and tune the antenna and whatnot. There are plenty of guys out there who are amateur radios operators who, if you need help, would be quite willing to do that. And that's one of the best things about amateur radio is that there are guys out there who just like helping people.
Yep.
And they do that. And they get involved with other things like the... and we can probably talk about this one next time, the Wireless Institute Civil Emergency Network, which does lots of things for the community from an amateur radio point of view.
More in emergency zones.
Well, running... communications on car rallies and bike rallies and boat races and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Just providing the community service. And it's all done for free.
So basic unit, you could get off around 200.
Yep.
what would a real pro go up to? Like, what's the range from 200 up to what?
The latest software-defined radios that have come out from Yaesu and ICOM are around $6,000.
$6,000? And would they be a base station at your home?
They would be a base station at your home, capable of putting out 300 or 400 watts of power, which is a lot more than a CB. And then if you want to spend some more money, you can buy a linear amp that'll take you up to 400 watts.
So let's go back to 600, 6,000 you said, wasn't it?
Yeah, about $6,000.
About $6,000. You couldn't put one of those in a car, could you?
You'd need a big car.
You'd need to take up half
They're bigger than a shoebox. They're bigger than a couple of shoeboxes, actually. You'd need to have a decent battery in there as well if you wanted to sit on the side of the road talking.
So,
but, yeah, most guys, there are radios out there for that particular band that are around $200 or $300 or $400 that'll do most of what they'll do, but they're just not as sophisticated. Okay. They don't have all the controls that the better ones have.
So if somebody, we'll say go the middle of the range, we'll go $4,000 rather than go right at the top. What are they going to do? They can still only talk, but are they going to be able to talk further around the world, or what are they? What's the benefit of them?
Well, the benefit of them is convenience. It's all touchscreen. Instead of knobs and dials and buttons and whatnot. So it's all touchscreen, which everything is these days. You've got much more control over the voice processing, so you can cut the amount of voice that you're putting out, so you put more information into the ether when you transmit. And there's a lot more processing on receive signal to eliminate noise, digitally and eliminate noise, and it makes a significant difference to if you get a very weak signal that's just above the noise level. My ears aren't sensitive enough now
to pick
I can hear there's a voice there, but I don't know what they're saying. If I had one of these new software defined radios, I could probably pick a lot more out of it than I am now.
But
my radio at home cost me $400, I think, second hand. But it does what I need it to do. I'd love to go out and buy a new fancy dancy current generation thing, but it's just out of the financial range for me.
Well, apart from that, though, you're not going to, other than it being a whole lot clearer than that, you're not going to be able to.
I'm not going to gain a whole lot.
They'll probably
give me twice as much power as I've got now.
Yep.
But that's all said and done. That'll make a little bit of difference to the bloke who's just picking me up on 100 watts and picking me up and being able to work out what I'm saying on 200 watts is probably the difference.
Yeah, if you're on radio, we'll say you got UHF at home, can you talk to someone in Japan and America and that, or is that not
UHF possible? Amateur radio is very much like CB, apart from the fact we're allowed to use a lot more power.
Right.
Which means that we could get better distances.
Yep.
But, as I was saying earlier, northern Tasmania into Victoria is not uncommon at the moment.
Yep.
As the sun cycle drops, that'll reduce. And there'll be days when it still happens.
Yep.
But as the sun's activity reduces and the atmospherics change, it'll get less and less and less until we get to the bottom of the cycle again in another 5.5 years or so.
What about say, you live in Lilydale Could you talk to people in Northern Territory or
no?
That...
Not on UHF. On HF, on the bands were allowed to use more power and we've got bigger antennas and whatnot. Yep. Yes, and the propagation is better for those frequencies.
But then you've got to have a lot better equipment, don't you?
Well, it's different equipment, not necessarily better, but it's bigger physically bigger antennas and things like that.
And more expensive?
Radios are definitely more expensive. Yep. Antennas, well, you can make them yourself. The antenna I use at home, which has so far got me all over Australia and into Spain and the US, that's cost me $30-$40, something like that to make.
And how tall?
It's actually a horizontal antenna.
Horizontal?
Yeah. Yeah, it's what they call a dipole, so it's got two legs, one out each way.
Yeah.
He says, expecting the listeners to be able to see me with my arms out.
Yeah.
So one out to the, actually because it's on the corner of the fence, one goes east-west and the other one goes north-south.
Yeah.
I've measured it so that it's at the right length for the frequency that it's on, and the centre of that's about 10 metres off the ground, and the ends are about, well, one's about 9.5 and the other one's about 13, so it's on a bit of a slope.
Yeah.
But it does what I need it to do. I'd love to have some more land and be able to put a bigger antenna up, but yeah. I've got a half a suburban block, so...
Do you need to... like you're saying with UHF and that, you don't need a license, but do you need a license to put the antenna up?
There are restrictions on antennas, and that's all to do with uniform building regulations.
Yep.
And putting masts up and things like that. So you can put an antenna up provided it's no more than 3 metres above the highest part of the building it's connected to, if it's connected to a building.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So if you've got a two-storey house that's 12 or 13 metres off the ground, you can go another 3 metres above that. But if you've only got a single-storey house, you can only go that sort of 12 metres or something like that off the ground. And but you can get a permit for an antenna mast. However, I haven't found anywhere in the building regulations for the form to apply for a permit where you can apply for an amateur radio antenna.
Haven't you?
No. You can apply for a telecommunications antenna mast, yeah. But there's nowhere that says amateur radio antenna. You say antenna mast, and they say, which telco is it?
Fair dinkum, yeah.
So all right. that's a question that I've thrown at a couple of councils. I threw that at Whitehorse at Yarra Rangers, but I haven't had an answer yet from either of them.
Just quickly.
But in New South Wales, it's different.
Is it?
Amateur radio operators are exempt from UBRs for erecting a TI.
Oh. Yarra Valley Amateur Radio Group, how many members are you on?
At the AGM last night, we have 18.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's 18 paid members. We have a number of honorary members.
Yeah, life
and
members.
Some life members and whatnot, yeah.
Oh, that's terrific.
We meet out at the old Scout Hall on Steeles Creek Road, Yarra Glen.
Very good.
And it's second and fourth Tuesday of the month.
Second and fourth Tuesday of the month. Give us the address again.
It's George Miller Reserve, Steeles Creek Road, Yarra Glen.
And I think you share that with some crafters, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. You've had them on as well.
In a week or two.
Yes.
Well, Chris, thanks for coming in and talking to us. I've got to get out. It's time for just a quick reminder that Greg will be on with the Oz Indie Show between 3 and 5 o'clock. He's getting ready to push me out the door. Always a great show. So give Greg a listen. I'll be back next, as I say, Sunday between 12 and 3 and 6 and 8. But I'll also be back next week and we'll be talking to our private investigator as well. So I'll leave you all to it. Thank you.
Thanks very much.